Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Catherine Cole in Washington. Food waste is a problem around the world, especially in wealthy nations. Studies estimate that between 30 and 40% of the food in wealthy countries is thrown away every year. At the same time, millions of people in the world do not have enough to eat. Christopher Cruz will join us today to investigate some of these issues. Later in the show, Karen Leggett will report on what farmers in the United States are doing to reduce food waste. But first, here is Christopher Cruz.
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says more than a billion tons of food is wasted each year. Much of that waste happens in wealthy nations, but it happens in developing countries as well. Even as all this food is being wasted, it is estimated that 1 billion people are undernourished, and hundreds of millions of people go to sleep hungry each day. Danielle Nierenberg is the co-founder and president of Food Tank, an organization that studies food issues.
A lot of people in the world, 1 out of 8 people is hungry. And at the same time, we have around 1.5 billion people who are obese. So that excess has consequences, not just on our waistlines, but on the environment, on food security, and a whole range of other factors.
Ms. Nierenberg says much of the food waste in the developing world is caused by poor infrastructure, like bad roads, and storage areas that are too small. In wealthy nations, people are to blame because they buy more than they can eat. Ms. Nierenberg also blames dates that are printed on food containers. These dates tell buyers and sellers what date the food should be sold or eaten by. She says these dates cause people to throw away food too soon. VOA spoke with Ms. Nierenberg when she was in Milan, Italy. She was attending the Barilla Center for Food and Nutrition yearly meeting. Officials at the meeting released what they call the Milan Protocol. The document calls on international leaders and policymakers to improve food security.
It not only focuses on food waste, but creating better and more sustainable agriculture systems, as well as focusing on unhealthy lifestyles and really helping reduce the epidemic of obesity and overweight that is plaguing not just rich countries, but poor countries as well.
Ms. Nierenberg says the amount of food wasted each year shows there is already enough food to feed the planet.
The problem of hunger in the world is not one of not having enough food. We produce more than enough food for every man, woman, and child to eat every day. Yet it's political reasons, it's poverty, certainly, that prevents food from getting to people who need it the most.
I'm Christopher Cruz.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Catherine Cole. A lot of people look at the United States as a rich country. Yet many American farmers are struggling financially. How do they deal with wasted food and unused crops? As Karen Leggett reports, some are using social media to help solve the problem.
The United States Department of Agriculture found that more than half of the small farms in California do not make a profit. One California farm family is using social media in an effort to change the situation and reduce wasted food. Nick Papadopoulos is general manager of Bloomfield Farms in Sonoma County. It was difficult for him to watch his employees returning from several weekend farmers markets with top quality, unsold produce. Mr. Papadopoulos said he would find boxes of leafy greens, herbs, and carrots left in a storage area. The vegetables would go bad before the next market day. As a result, Mr. Papadopoulos came up with a plan to offer the food at a low price by advertising it on the farm's Facebook status page on Sunday nights.
We're going to put breaking news, crop mob. Two pallets of Bloomfield Farms organic veggies, $150 per pallet.
The deals were open to anyone using the social media website. One week, several homeowners in a neighboring community bought the vegetables. Another week, the buyers were a group of friends. Nick Papadopoulos began using social media after he went to work on a farm belonging to his wife's father. One night, he began thinking about the issue of wasted food when he could not find a place to donate 32 cases of organic broccoli. He ended up giving some of the food to chickens and using the rest to make fertilizer.
I don't believe we should let it go to waste. I believe we should share it, donate it, whatever it takes to get it out there. And if possible, as farmers, we would like to recover a small portion of our costs.
After his success using Facebook, Mr. Papadopoulos helped to set up a website called cropmobster.com. It is a place where people involved with food production, feeding the hungry, and those who want to buy locally grown food can find surplus produce. Have you ever used the internet to buy or sell crops? If so, tell us about your experience. You can leave a message on our Facebook page or visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Karen Leggett.
When you visit our website, click on Contact Us to tell us what you want to hear about on a future show. You can also read, listen to, and download our programs. You will also find podcasts, captioned videos, and lessons to test your English skills. That's our program for today. I'm Catherine Cole. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is from VOA Learning English. And for the latest world news, be sure to listen to VOA at the top of the hour, Universal Time.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English. From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Relations between the United States and France appeared to grow stronger this week after President François Hollande visited Washington. President Barack Obama welcomed the French leader by taking him on Monday to Charlottesville, Virginia. They visited Monticello, the 18th century house designed and built by Thomas Jefferson, America's third president. Jefferson was also one of the writers of the Declaration of Independence and served as America's representative to France from 1785 to 1789. President Obama told President Hollande that Monticello is an example of what he called the incredible history between the United States and France. Thomas Jefferson loved France and was a supporter of the French Revolution. As Mr. Obama noted, France supported Britain's North American colonies as they fought for independence.
All this is signified here at Monticello, and our hope in starting our visit this way is that just as we can extend back through generations to see the links between the United States and France, tomorrow we'll have an opportunity to talk about not only our current bonds and alliance, but also ways that we can strengthen our cooperation in the future.
President Hollande also spoke to reporters during his visit to Monticello. He noted how a Frenchman, the Marquis de Lafayette, assisted the colonial forces during the American Revolution.
We were allies in the time of Jefferson and Lafayette. We are still allies today. We were friends in the time of Jefferson and Lafayette, and we will remain friends forever.
President Hollande spent the second day of his state visit in Washington. He received the traditional ceremonial welcome to the White House before opening talks with President Obama. Two newspapers, Le Monde and The Washington Post, published an opinion piece written by the two men. They wrote about a modern relationship marked by expansion. They said it includes more cooperation in NATO, agreement to remove chemical weapons from Syria, and to prevent Al-Qaeda from gaining more influence in Africa. Tuesday night, the French president was honored at a state dinner. More than 300 people were invited to the White House. The dinner guests included top U.S. officials, business leaders, and movie stars. The White House was forced to reprint invitations to the state dinner after Mr. Hollande announced a breakup with his former partner last month. After the dinner, the French leader flew to California, which is considered the center of American information technology. There, he met with leaders of several IT companies, including Facebook and Google. At a gathering in San Francisco, Mr. Hollande noted, "It is here in California that the world of tomorrow is being invented." He added that for centuries, France has wanted to change the world. Together, we can. The French president has invited President Obama to France in June for ceremonies marking the 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion in Normandy. That was when Western Allied forces began an effort to free mainland Europe from occupation by Nazi Germany and its allies. France will also lead a climate conference next year. Both leaders say they are repeating their promise to lead the world in dealing with climate change. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember.
Now, the Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is called How John Bosco Outsung the Devil. It was written by Arthur P. Davis. Here is Walter Guthrie with the story.
Well, sir, speaking about singing, the folks down in my section of Virginia still talk about old John Bosco and how he outsung the devil himself. Now, this John Bosco was a bass singer, and he had the sweetest and deepest bass that anybody had ever listened to on this earth. A tall black fella, John was no great big man, he was just tall and thin. And he had no great bellows of a chest, like some singers. He was just tall and hollow-looking, like one of them big pipes on a pipe organ. But as I said, John could really sing. When he hit those high notes, his voice was as sweet and as silver-toned as a sleigh bell. Why, some folks say that even the birds used to shut up when John sung those sweet high notes. They kept quiet and just listened. And when he went down the scale to the low notes, there was something in his singing that just tore at your insides. He went down that scale so far, you could feel yourself a-throbbing and everything around you a-shaking. John brought more folks to church by his singing than the preacher did by his preaching. The whole county, white and black alike, used to come to hear John sing. Of course, the other singers in the church choir didn't like John. He just drowned them out. Besides, John knew he was good, and let everybody else know it, too much and too often. He got prouder and prouder and harder than ever to live with. He began to lose friends. Well, the pastor saw John changing too. So one Sunday, he preached a red-hot sermon on pride. He told how the devil got kicked out of heaven because of pride. And then the pastor brought that sermon right home to John Bosco. He told how a man could let a voice that God had given him to do good, go to his head and turn him against his friends. And here he turned around and looked right at John Bosco up there in the choir, while everybody else in the church held their breath. But John didn't care. He didn't even listen. But John's wife did not miss a word. She told him how bad she felt to hear the pastor preaching right at her husband up there in public. John was furious and damned the church and the preacher and everybody in it. He didn't need them. He didn't need anybody. To hell with them. Well, after that, John's pride got complete control of him. He no longer cared about his family. He forgot about everything except his own greatness. He kept saying, "I'm the best bass singer in the county." Soon it became the best bass singer in the state. Then John began to boast, "I am the best bass singer in the United States." One Saturday, he walked into the village store and announced to all the folks there, "I'm the best bass singer in the whole world, and I know it. In fact, I'm the best damn bass singer in the universe, including the stars above and regions below." That was going too far. The folks felt God should cut him down. But God took no notice of John's wild talk. But there was someone else who did. Old Satan. "You hear that fool," Satan said. "I'm gonna step up there and teach him a thing or two." So pretty soon, as John Bosco walked out into the fields, he met old Satan, who looked like any other dirt farmer, but John knew right away it was the devil. "Howdy do, sir," John said pleasantly to Satan. The devil said with a kind of a sneer, "I hear you think you can sing bass." Well, devil or no devil, John didn't like that. "I don't think I can sing bass," John came right back. "I know I can. More bass than anybody. Anybody in the world." "How about the universe, including the stars above and the regions below?" Old John felt the sting. He forgot everything and blurted out, "Yes, sir. I mean just that. No less." "You willing to put your money where your mouth is?" the devil asked. John agreed to make a bet. The devil was now talking polite as you please, because he had John where he wanted him. "If you sing a deeper bass than I do," the devil said, "I'll give you anything you name. But if I beat you, I take your soul right now." Old John Bosco swelled up like a bullfrog. "Let's get down to business." "Just a minute," said the devil. "You haven't told me what you want if you win." "All I want," said John, "is a hall that will hold 1,000,000 people. I want an orchestra of 1,000 of the best players and a chorus of 1,000 of the best singers in the world. And then I want to give a concert. All the history books will talk about it. The concert of John Bosco, the greatest bass singer in the universe." Well, they agreed what to sing. "Asleep in the Deep." John sang first, the pretty part. It was so sweet that all the angels must have been listening, wishing they could sing like that. Then John started down the scale. You could hear him clean over in the next state. He was down so low that the rumbling shook every house for miles around. Folks knew it was John Bosco a-singing. Then they heard another voice after John finished. When this second voice sang the pretty first part of the song, folks showed an uneasy look in their eyes. The voice was sweet, they had to admit, but there was something too sweet about it, kind of sinfully sweet, like the taste of forbidden fruit. Next, the second singer hit the lows, and all hell seemed to break loose. The rumble was so low and so great, it was like 99 earthquakes rolled into one. When John heard this, he knew he was whipped unless he got some help. He fell on his knees, raised his eyes to God, and tried to pray. But he could not say a word. He started to think about his pride and how it had brought him down. For the first time in many days, he remembered his wife and children, the trouble he'd caused them. He was deeply moved, moved to tears. All of a sudden, his mouth was free and he could pray. He lifted his hands and his eyes to heaven and cried, "Oh, Lord, I have been a fool. Save me, Lord, if it's not asking too much. But if you don't save me, look out for my wife and poor fatherless children. That's all I ask, Lord." The Lord answered John, not by words or signs, but John knew the Lord had answered. He felt a new power within him. He fixed his eye on old Satan and said politely, "I believe I've got a second chance coming to me." And then he began to sing again. His voice at first was so natural-born sweet that folks fell down on their knees and started to pray. Then John took it down the scale. Some folks said it was the deepest roll of thunder that the ear of mortal man had ever heard. John said it was not thunder, but God's voice all mixed up with his own. He felt so good, so at peace with the world, that he had love in his heart, even for old Satan. But Satan had gone. When he heard John's last note, he knew what had happened, and Satan's not one to be around when God is speaking. John Bosco came home a changed man. There was no more bragging about his greatness. He went back to the church and to the choir, and he became a friend and a helper to all his friends and brothers in the county. He was a good, steady worker in the vineyard of the Lord until God decided to gather him to his bosom.
You have heard the story called How John Bosco Outsung the Devil. It was written by Arthur P. Davis and adapted for Special English by Harold Berman. It first appeared in American Negro Stories, edited by John Clark, published by Hill and Wang in 1966. Your narrator was Walter Guthrie. This story is copyrighted, all rights reserved. Listen again next week at this same time for another American story told in Special English. This is Shep O'Neill.